This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, horse people. I'm Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 14th, episode 1337, Good Morning Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Exciting, knowing that for the rest of my life, I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
Thank you. It's exciting.
Glenn and I have changed studios this morning, so I get to practice pressing the multitude of buttons for when he goes on the road and I have to produce from his studio A. So Glenn's here too. Welcome to the show, Glenn.
Hey, and that's not entirely true. She also said, I love talking training with Mary. You don't know a damn thing about training, so I'm doing Mary's show. That was more
There was a little of that too. And Mary showed up this morning, so we know that she did not win the lottery.
Oh, did you win, Mary?
No, I didn't even win $4.
We didn't either.
I bought five tickets. I got one number on the five tickets. So
about 15.
Somebody from
tickets.
Florida won, though.
Yeah, what is it? Florida, Tennessee, and California.
Yep, that's right. I'm wondering if Templeton Thompson won because they live in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Go troll her Facebook.
My friend Denise could have won the lottery. I'll have to Facebook her right away. If her Facebook page has been shut down, I'll know it was her.
Well, you know, I was reading an article that said that your chances of being able to stay anonymous are really low because I think only six states let you remain anonymous. So
That's true. That is true.
And some of them will let you set up an LLC so that, you know, your company name is the one who receives it.
A lot of research here, girlfriend. You were planning on winning big time.
I was using the secret where, you know, you like imagine it into being where you act like it's already happened and obviously it didn't work. So thanks, Oprah. I was preparing and everything.
You know, these gurus that do that self-help stuff, they all make a lot of money while the rest of us are still trying to figure out how to do the self-help stuff.
Yes.
Or we buy the book and then never do.
Well, so, they imagine everybody buying their book.
That's right.
Well, if you read The Secret, that's exactly what it is. It's like, you know, I imagined this book into being and it happened. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, where's my money?
Well, happy birthday to Mary. And we also have another happy birthday today for auditor Katie Kelly. So, do we have another happy birthday? Let's see here. Let's do this again because I like it. There we go.
That's cute.
Yeah. And you know, Glenn gave me buttons with sound files in them, so I apologize in advance, everybody. I'm going to be pressing a lot of buttons. But Mary's here the second Thursday of every month, and we've got a choco block full of cool stories, training tips, and such coming up on today's show. So, Glenn, why don't you tell us what it is?
I won't be as pithy as Jennifer and as uses bigger words because I just don't know that many big words. But coming up on today's show, we have Mary and Jen talking about training in the first half hour, all kinds of things. Mary's going to have a training tip on working at liberty safely. And then Craig Johnson is joining. Apparently, safety is Mary's theme today because then Craig Johnson's going to be joining us on how to fall off with style. You know, I love that tagline, how to fall off with style, but shouldn't it be how to fall off with style without a hospital visit? That you add that to that, okay? And then Jen, is it Digate?
Okay, I just messaged her this. I think it's Diggity.
Diggity. Okay, that's even that's prettier.
Diggity
is going to be on with the differences and similarities in training dogs and horses. That should be fun. Coming up on today's show.
Woohoo! Diggity. That sounds like a character in Harry Potter, doesn't it?
I know. Diggity. I hope that's right. We'll find out soon enough.
Yes,
but
we will.
Yeah, I was pronouncing it Diggit, but that's probably not right.
we could be European and suave and call it Digate.
Maybe it's that. And she sent me the phonetic pronunciation, but I'm not really good with that kind of stuff. So we'll have to find that out. I'm very interested to learn.
Yeah, we have spell check, but we don't have pronunciation check.
Exactly.
Yeah. We should do that. So getting into the meat of our show today, haha, pun intended. What's this about you learning to do leather work? And by the way, the breast collar shaped thing that has a different name that you made and you posted on your Facebook page is gorgeous. So tell the story, please.
Thank you. Well, so my mom and I are, we're busy making stuff for Pomona, and she's making these insanely awesome purses, it's got some leather work, and we're using the blankets that we got from Mexico, and they're looking really pretty. And so we've made about, 3 trillion trips to Tandy Leather Factory. I don't know if you have those.
I'm familiar with them, but we do not have them here.
We have like 50 locations in Dallas, or a whole bunch of locations, and don't ever go because you'll spend $1,000, because you go in to get like, I need to make this leather strap. And then you start looking, you're like, oh man, I can make this pocket knife holder and I could do this. And oh my gosh, you're snake skidding hiding. And
is it like a craft store for leather nuts?
Yes. Okay. And they do supply, like, it's not like the Hobby Lobby of leather store. Like, they supply bootmakers, saddle makers. I mean, there's everything you ever wanted to know. And of course, both of us, we don't ever like pick one thing and stick with it, because that would be practical. You know, every week my mom and I are like, I know, let's do like macrame this week. And then the next week we're done with that, and we're going to do underwater basket weaving the week after. So
underwater basket weaving, please make sure that ends up in the show title today, Glenn.
Yeah. And we're getting really hardcore into the leather work, and we decided, I've got some cool demos coming up with Guthrie. We're going to be doing a lot of Liberty and some bridleless riding. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool to have something neat to have them wear? I've got a couple of really neat cordeos, and I thought, well, why don't I make one? And a cordeo, for those of you who don't know, is just a neck rope. So I use it like as a signal for bridleless riding. So I thought, why don't just take something like a breast collar and just make it look like more of a, make it into a neck rope. Mm-hmm. So, bought all the tools, and I have been cutting the cowhide with either scissors or an X-Acto knife, but I'm using some pretty thick stuff. So I asked the guy, I'm like, okay, how do you cut this really thick leather? And he said, oh, well, you need a round knife. And he got me this really cool round knife. It looks like a medieval torture device. Which
I don't
turns
like the
out,
direction this is taking.
No, it yeah. was. And
should we turns tell? Out, should we warn parents of small children listening to remove the
earbuds?
Oh no, earbuds
no I'm gonna keep from getting too graphic. But yeah, it was. It did not go well. And apparently, you need to actually know things to do this. And I don't really sit and read directions all that much, or do things like take classes.
That's you enjoy the process of discovery, Mary.
Yes, which is what happened. It was like a very sensory experience. And so I pulled up a bunch of YouTube videos, because I look at this thing, and the guy told me, he's like, oh yeah, you hold it like this and you use it like this. I'm like, great, take my money. And so I bought it, and it's really cool looking. It's got this neat wood grain handle. And I get home and I Google or I YouTube how to use a round knife. And there
and
were
everybody
several...
knows quality information comes from YouTube.
Oh, YouTube is my best friend. It's never done me wrong except for this one time. Well, the problem is I'm so ADD that I pulled up a bunch of videos and I'm looking on the previews and they're all like 15 minutes, 25 minutes. I'm like, I don't have time for that. So I get one that's 3 minutes and I couldn't even sit still through that one. So I just scroll through, like I run my little cursor through until I see the angle the guy's using it at. And I'm like, perfect, got it. So I take my leather and I'm cutting out my cordeo. And apparently it needs to be like sharpened and stuff. You know, I don't know. I didn't have time for that kind of thing. And it skipped the leather and jammed straight into my middle finger.
Ah! Where's that sound effect, Glenn?
Oh.
Oh, ow.
Oh, it was not good. I felt like it hit bone, but I think I'm being over dramatic. And so luckily my mom was a medic, plus she has also cut herself many times this week making things. So she said it was fine. I was not thinking it was fine. It was very painful. I got a little dizzy, had to sit down. But it's fine because Vetresen. So, you know, I have a bottle of Vetresen in the kitchen, so I'm totally fine.
Use Vetresen and you're set.
Yeah, I just put 3 Band-Aids on it, bled through all 3 Band-Aids. Couldn't feel my finger the whole day.
Oh, and that whole numbness thing. That'll last a good long time, too. Yes, it will.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I can deal with, you know, I've been injured a time or two, but slicing things, that doesn't sit well with me. So the world was spinning just a little bit. And so now I've gone back to using my trusty leather scissors for cutting leather.
That sounds like a really good plan considering recent history, Mary. Really does. So the beautiful shades of auburn and red that are on your newly finished piece of useful artwork. That's not really dye, is it?
Yeah. That's like my own special organic concoction. I put a little bit of myself into everything I make. So,
well, you know, safety with a round knife leads us rather conveniently into safety when training your horses. And your training tip this month, you wanted to talk a little bit about working at liberty with a horse this time, not a round knife, and some safety measures or some safety techniques that perhaps we should all pay close attention to and follow through to the end. Yeah?
Yes. So I've gotten into this a little bit before. We've had some really awesome trainers on to talk about liberty training but you know, what brought it to my mind, there's a video going around Facebook. I actually shared it on my horsemanship page and it's been kind of going around the last few years. There's a girl training. I think it's somewhere in Europe and she's training this horse at liberty and the horse and her are running together and she's laughing and she's feeding the horse cookies and you can kind of tell where the video is going. You know, about halfway through, they're running together and the horse kicks out and actually makes contact, hits her in the head. From what I understand, she broke her jaw, lost a few teeth. But it's not a good video if you have any kind of, you know, fearfulness or PTSD with working with horses. I would not recommend watching it. Just understand that it was not good. So, you know, I watched that and it kind of reminded me of a little bit of my first real liberty experiences. You know, and I've gotten into this a little bit before, but, you know, I started kind of delving into liberty a few years ago with one of my extreme Mustang makeover horses, Jax. And he was also one of the first horses I really experimented with clicker training on. And so kind of like I got into leather work, I decided I would just go out there and wing it as far as liberty's concerned. And we got a lot of really cool stuff done. He'd go circles around me. He'd stay by my side. It was really cute. And, you know, I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. And I went out with him one day in the pasture and I was playing around with them, and you know, we're doing our liberty, and I've got them jumping over trees in my you know, the down trees in my pasture, and it's really great. And I had worked so much on getting him close with me, I never really worked on getting him to go away from me. And I didn't have anything in my hands, no tools or anything that day. And horses in the pasture next door, it was really cold, and they started running around, and Jax kind of stopped and looked at him, and I thought, okay, he's probably going to run away now because he sees the other horses. And what he actually did was, he'd been circling around me before, and this time he started circling around me again, but he looked more like a shark. He looked, it was more like Jaws.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I could tell, you know, I knew enough. I could tell as he was circling around me, he was tossing his head and sort of, you know, snorting, and he was kind of angling his hip really too close for comfort. And I literally could not get this horse off of me. And I'm thinking, okay, what do I do now? Because he's telling me that he's probably going to kick out and rear up and strike out, and I might be collateral damage. And I actually had to sort of kind of make my way into a grove of trees in my pasture. And I was kind of up against a tree.
Wow. And he kept,
yeah.
Up against a tree without a flag is what you were.
I had nothing. And of course, the more noise I made or anything to try to shoo him away, the crazier he got. And so he's playing around with me, and I'm, you know, I'm kind of in these trees. I'm like, okay, I have to make a move soon. And right about that time, the horses in the pasture did something that caught his attention, and he stopped and he looked at him, and I thought, okay, it's now or never. And I had about 100 foot journey from the trees to my arena, which is also in that pasture. And I started running like a madwoman. And as I'm running to make my way to the arena fence, I hear this, like, these hooves coming behind me, this digga digga, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, I've got it. And I literally,
this is like a bad horror movie.
It was, my heart was racing, and I literally had to dive head first into the arena right before he got to me. And so I'm sitting in the arena, and I might have yelled at him a little bit once I got to the arena. And so it was really funny at the time, and it was really humbling because, you know, I consider myself a pretty good trainer, and I've got some experience, and you know, but Liberty was still kind of new to me at the time, and I didn't really understand you know, it as a discipline. And it really made me think, oh man, you know, I could not get this horse to move away from me, and that is really, really important to be able to do. So that was my little Liberty scare. And luckily I wasn't injured, and I didn't have to learn that lesson the hard way. But it kind of made me think, you know, you really, and we've had other trainers on the show say this before, you really need to tackle Liberty training as if it was a discipline, like anything else, like it's reining or, you know, trail riding or jumping. You've got to have a foundation. You've got to establish safety. You've got to have respect on both ends.
You have to watch the entire video.
Yes. Yeah. And yeah, that's another thing, you know,
Looking back on that, was it one of those cases where, as you saw his body language beginning to morph, that you really saw it coming, but just didn't, it was one of those things where, okay, things might go bad here, but you kept going anyway. It's like that train wreck and you can't look away.
Yeah. And, you know,
you saw it coming, but just didn't really see it coming.
Yes. And when I did stop and think, okay, you know, any stride now, he could just kick out. And I think a mistake a lot of people made when watching the video that I was discussing, they said, oh, that horse looks really angry. And because the horse was pinning its ears and tossing its head and kind of angling its hip in toward the girl. And I don't believe it was that. You know, if you watch horses play in the pasture, you'll see a lot of that same posturing, that kind of,
it's posturing. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Very rarely are they just literally going after each other to kill each other. You know, they're having, a lot of times they're just having fun, and they do that kind of same sort of play fighting, I guess. You know, they position themselves in ways, they kind of shoulder in and they arch their neck and they toss their head and they kick out. And the difference is when they play with each other and they bite each other on the neck or kick each other playfully and run all over the place or chase each other around. And, you know, a 1,000-pound animal can take it. But, you know, like I heard Stacey Westfall use this term and I really like it. They don't know that we are squishy and we have very sensitive parts that can't be kicked by a 1,000-pound animal. And
he just,
they just
is never going to get that. No.
Yeah. So with liberty training, it's a real balance because you want your horse sort of pushing on that bubble just a little bit. You want them to be bold and confident and a little playful. So you can shape that behavior to, you know, to make really cool liberty. But there has to be you have to have fail safes. You have to have, you know, be able to send them away and say, okay, it's too playful. You need to go away now and get away from me. And I don't think that's discussed enough when doing liberty. And that's the lesson I learned is we work so hard on the closeness part of it that when things start to go wrong and I haven't put a button in there that says, okay, you need to go away from me and, you know, get out of my space now. You know, that's when things can go wrong, because I knew with Jax that if I had made too much commotion, you know, without having any kind of tool like a flag or a whip or anything like that, he might have taken that as a, oh, you're jumping around and playing. Okay, me too. And then just sort of kicked out. And I don't think half the time, I don't think they're aiming for us. I think they're just playing and we just happen to be in the way.
Well, as another horse would instinctively know how to stay out of the way of that kick. A human doesn't.
Yeah. And even if they do take a couple of hooves to the rib cage, you know, they just kind of go, ugh, and then they keep playing, you know.
They keep playing. Yeah. Despite the fact that we're going, oh my God, you're going to kill yourself. So as a horseman, would you be able to give us some parameters on as a horse? You have horse A and human A. Are there certain horses and certain humans that really should not be going down the at liberty training without without professional help in close proximity? Are there, you know, is there certain situations you say, you know, don't go there unless you have help right there?
Yeah, you know, I guess my advice was, if you have any doubt, absolutely seek someone out, you know, even if you just haul over there for a day. And that's actually what I ended up doing, is I hauled over to, you know, I did actually start watching videos and reading, which always helps. But I did haul over to Tommy Turvey's, which we've discussed a time or two. And I learned that, you know, the liberty trainers like him that do it as part of a performance or have learned from, you know, the circus way, which is, you know, you can make fun of it, but circus training, as I've come to find out, is very disciplined and it is very much about safety. And Tommy had all these fail safes in, this has to happen. You need to get this established. And liberty's like any other kind of groundwork. And I think the number one thing I would say, actually, there's two main points I would make. Is one, you need to work at a distance as much as you work together. You have to be able to, you know, we all work on the cue that says, come here and come be with me. But I don't think we work enough on the cue that says, go away. And
interesting. What goes,
yeah, you need to say, go away. And that works for both safety, but also if I can work my horse and control his feet at a distance, then the likelihood that he'll run away from me during liberty is going to be very minimal. It's going to start getting really small because I can control him from anywhere he is. So it's really important for a number of reasons. And then I would also say, have a good go forward cue. And this is something I work on a lot during colt starting. And I didn't think about using it for liberty so much until I realized that, a lot of the same concepts apply. If a horse is really sticky footed, meaning they're kind of, when they move, they're kind of just bouncing up and down in place more so than moving out. And this doesn't mean fast, this means moving forward. Then when you do ask them to go forward, if they're really kind of sticky footed and they're tossing their head, they're a little pinny eared, they're swishing their tail, then if all of a sudden you add more pressure, sometimes instead of moving forward, they will do things like kick out or rear up, and so those are the things that can get us hurt. So before you really work on getting your horse to come in close. I work on lots of transitions. One of the most important would be, can I get my horse to go from a walk to a canter with no tossing your head, no kicking out, you know, just a nice smooth transition. And if, you know, if you can get that done, you're going to ensure a lot more safety, because if I can easily just give my horse a signal, whatever it is, you cluck or you point or whatever, and my horse can move out without any objection, don't toss your head, don't ring your tail, don't kick out. Then if I'm working at Liberty and my horse is a little close, I can give that signal and say, okay, go out, go somewhere. And I'll, minimize the chances of getting kicked, because, yeah, you know, that is really important, because I don't have a rope on my horse. I can't tip his nose and swing that rope and make his hindquarters go away. So, you know, you have to work on that.
And that makes such perfect sense when you take a moment to step back and see the bigger picture, because if you're watching horses interacting with one another in a herd situation, when a more dominant horse pushes a lesser dominant horse in the herd away, and the horse being pushed away swats his tail, pins his ears, threatens to make a kicking action as he moves away, that same horse is going to be the one that's going to keep coming back and challenging his herd superior for his position in the pecking order, versus a horse, dominant horse pushes away a horse that has a very, very low dominance level in the herd. He's not going to do that. He's just going to tuck his tail and run. So when your horse is displaying those tossing my head, swatting my tail, thinking about kicking by swinging my hips in, he's saying to you, okay, you're the leader right now, but I'm going to keep challenging it. And that kind of makes perfect sense now.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, I do think that horses are constantly jockeying for position within the herd. I think they want to know where they stand, and they're, you know, I don't want people to get too much into the idea, though, that a horse being playful is, you know, challenging your authority is alpha, because then I think what I see happen too much is aggression on the trainer's part. Like, exactly. You know, how dare you disrespect me? Right.
You wouldn't typically see that in a herd situation. It's very unlikely that the horse pushing his inferior herd mate away wouldn't do that under normal circumstances. He's going to say, oh yeah, you swung your hip at me, big deal, I'm not impressed. But he's still going to push that horse away.
Yeah, I think with the horses, instead of thinking in terms of respect and disrespect, I mean, those are important. I've actually been thinking about this a lot lately. I think a horse, like within Jax's case, I don't believe in his mind when he had his little episode, I don't think he was thinking, okay, I'm going to knock her off her position as alpha and I shall take over the herd and run the world. I think he was thinking, oh, it's cold, my friends are playing, you're out here, you're my friend, let's play together. And can I kick you? And are you going to kick me back? And maybe I'll push on you and then you push on me. And I, you know, while I do want a little playfulness in my horse and I want them to enjoy what they're doing, they need to understand that my rules are different than your herd mates' rules. And so even though I may have to send them out with energy and say, okay, go away now because you're too close, you don't want to add any anger into the mix. I don't take it personally. It's just him finding out what is okay and what is not okay. So if he gets a little playful and I say, okay, you need to get about 300 yards away from me now, I'm not going to do it like, how dare you? I'm going to do it, you know, with a mindset that say, okay, now's the time to go away. And then when he goes away and I see that he has a different look on his face, then I can say, okay, now is the time to come back. And I think being able to push him away and bring him back are really important things. Again, not only for safety, but being able to control their feet anywhere will help ensure that your liberty is going to go really well and your horse is going to want to stay with you. And when he is with you, he's got a nice, good expression. He knows that, okay, this person doesn't really like it when I get too playful. So I need to act like this.
You're going to teach the horse some emotional control.
Yes.
Hey, there we go. Hey, well, we've got a quick question before we hang up our training tip for the month, because we've gabbed much too long, and that's my fault. That's why I'm we had a listener ask if you could suggest any good books or other resources for training at Liberty.
That is actually a really good question. I do have one of Tommy's Liberty DVDs, which is pretty good. I like that one in that it has a lot of steps that say, okay, you need to get this, and you need to get this, and you need to get this. Another thing we didn't really go into very much, but I would like to say you need to have a good whoa button, and that's got to be, you know, absolute. If I say whoa, you stop, because you're going to work on calling your horse to you, and sometimes they want to run right up to your face, so you need to have good whoa. I just bought a book. I haven't even
cracked. That would be Tommy Turvey. The Tommy you're referring to.
Okay. He's got some interesting insight. I actually just bought a book from Jonathan Field. Now, I have to say, I haven't hardly cracked the spine on it yet, but I do like Jonathan's program. I think he's a very kind and considerate horse trainer, and he's really good about anything that he puts out there. He puts out so much information. He's not going to string you along. So even though I haven't, you know, my disclaimer is I haven't read it cover to cover, I think it would be a really good book with a lot of really good insight. I do a little bit of Liberty in my clicker training DVD, even though it's not a Liberty DVD, but you know, I show how you can use things like a target to get your horse to follow objects over obstacles. So that's also a really good one.
Cool. And speaking of DVDs, et cetera, you're going to be at the Western States Horse Expo in Pomona, February 5th through 7th of this year. And you're going to do the click to win. So you're going to be doing all kinds of really cool clicker training at that demo?
Yes, I'm so excited about this. Guthrie and I are both going to be there. You know, there's a lot of great clicker training resources and trainers out there. We're actually going to interview one here on today's show. And what I'm hoping to add to it is show how you can, I'll have some fun stuff. Like Guthrie's been playing fetch, and we're doing kind of agility type stuff over obstacles, which is really fun. Liberty groundwork, bridleless riding. So we'll have all that fun stuff to show what the possibilities are, but I'm also going to be spending some time showing you, okay, here's how you can make it work for your reining maneuvers and for your collection and teaching side pass. So I'm really excited to show what we have, and you can actually get the schedule on the Pomona website, which I think is horseexpoevents.com, or on their Facebook page. They've got the schedule. They've got a ton of great clinicians out there. So definitely go check that out. I've posted some links on my Facebook page as well that you can get to the schedule from there.
Yep. And if you have a poor memory, if you just Google Western States Horse Expo Pomona, it's going to come up at the top of your list, and you can go there. So let's welcome our guest to the show.
Okay, we have Craig Johnson with us today. He's been on the show once before. We talked a little bit about ranch riding. Craig is a elite reining trainer, and we're going to talk today about falling off with style. How are you, Craig?
Hi, Mary. I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. So I haven't actually talked with you in a little while, and one of the first things I wanted to ask, you went to the AQHA World Show for the ranch riding, right?
I did, yep.
How did that go this year?
Well, it was pretty interesting. Of course, the ranch riding is one of the new disciplines in several of the breed organizations and within some of the stock horse events, and it is so exciting. It's a pattern event, one horse in the arena at a time. And oh my gosh, it's going over so big. But within the rule book of ranch riding, there's one little paragraph that describes that a judge could call for anything reasonably associated with working a ranch. You know, and up to this point, they've, you know, basically just had some logs and a gate and things like that. But they determined that you also might come across a cow, which is true. So they put a few cows in a little pen at the end of the arena, and we just had to ride around that pen of cows, which doesn't seem like a big deal unless you were involved with ranch riding and, you know, didn't realize that a cow might actually happen. You know, And there was a lot of people that were having a little bit of a conniption over it, only because they went, wow, we love this ranch riding class, and yet we don't live on a ranch. You know, we just ride around and have fun in our backyard and go show in this new class that is just a blast for us, you know. So it's not going to end up with a cow in every time there is a ranch riding, but occasionally, you know, the show committee or the judge might decide, hey, that'd be fun. And it actually was. It was great fun. It was good for the horses, and it became, you know, a bit of a, you know, just another way for the judges to kind of evaluate how your horse responds in certain situations in what might be considered normal ranch activity. And my particular horses, I was very confident about the cow thing because one was an ex-cutter. You know, so obviously she was fine with cows. And the other one, we work a bunch of cows on a place, you know, tracking them out across the pasture and stuff. And, you know, my horses are not necessarily worried about cows. And yet, at the World Show, my cutter, I got halfway down the wall and she saw the cow. She dropped on her belly, kind of shook a little bit, dropped, you know, fell backwards and then took a roll back and went back out the gate, you know. So that was exciting.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, and I didn't expect that. And yet, what did I expect? You know, she knows how to work cows. She's supposed to be. And the odd thing about it is, you know, a lot of the horses that do have some cow instinct in them, they're the ones that are actually a little bit afraid of cows. That's what makes them so exciting in front of a cow. And, you know, then there was a couple of the horses that I showed that really we don't work much cows on. They're more, I'd say they probably aren't real cow bred, you know, as far as the bloodlines and things like that. And shoot, they just went out there and didn't even notice them really, you know, but, you know, it's not their natural instinct. And so though, of course, the ones that didn't pay any attention to the cows were the ones that did really well. And the ones that did notice the cows and actually show some interest in them, those are the ones that, you know, didn't do so well. So yeah. it was just kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah, you know, I saw that email come out and it was literally down to the wire. They said, oh, by the way, there's going to be cows. And yeah. I was putting myself in the people's position like you and everyone else who qualified. I'm like, I think I would have a heart attack because I'm kind of like you. The horse that I would have tried to qualify is cowbred. He's been on cows. We've even sure. roped a time or two, and you know he tracks great and everything. And you don't want to be the one to say, I can't believe there's cows in my ranch class. You don't want to be the one to raise a. But
right.
Cow work is. And it would, if I was in the same position, I would be the most concerned about my cowbred horses because, you know, a horse uh-huh. That's bred to do that, and especially one that's worked cattle, they're bred to look at the cow. They're bred to see something move and go, what is that? Sure. Where's it going? And it's the ones that uh-huh. aren't really in tune with the cattle that would be easy, you know, oh, yeah, it's a cow, whatever, I don't care.
Sure.
And Yeah, so that's really tricky, and it's actually one of the really tricky things about showing in things like stock horse where you're working cattle 1 minute and the next minute you're going over obstacles because on one hand you have to tell your horse, look at everything, look at movements, be aware, be alert, be ready to stop and turn on a dime. Oh, but ignore all this, you know, ignore it.
But now pretend ignore it.
There. Yeah. So that's really challenging with an event like that. So on one hand, I love it. I think it does separate the boys from the men, so to speak, in that uh-huh. class and really shows, yeah, this horse can handle this job. I think it's a wonderful thing to do. On the other hand, if I had hauled all over the country all year to qualify my horse for World, only to find out, oh my God, I've got to have him ready for this cow situation at the big show where I'm trying to win the buckle, and I don't have mm-hmm. the luxury of having cows until now, but that's a whole other story. I'd be sweating bullets a little bit. So yeah, that's a really interesting interesting thing. I'm kind of happy they did it, but yeah, if I had been in that position, I would have been one of the ones trying to lose my mind.
Exactly. Well, there was a lot of people that had a little, you know, certainly some questions about it, and oftentimes, you know, it seems like maybe especially back east where there's really not as many cows as we have around here and, you know, in Texas and in Oklahoma where we kind of, it's just kind of a normal program down here. But, it was sure bothering a lot of people. And as you said, it turned out to be, you know, the horses that were bred for the cow thing that seemed to you know, be more bothered by it than others. But it was kind of a fun situation, and shoot, we just get prepared for whatever. And given that one, you know, little sentence in Vance Riding, you know, that anything that might be, you know, normally incurred in, you know, working a ranch, you know, the judge could just pick out something. So shoot, you know, I've got the thing, and you might need to, you know, figure out how to tie your horse to the fence and dig a ditch, or, you know, set a post or something. I mean, shoot, who knows what they'll ask for, you know? So yeah, I just get them used to most anything, which is good for a horse anyway.
Yeah, I think we had a little sound effect issue there.
That's what happens when the host surfs. Yeah. I was trying to find cow ranch riding classes, and I came up with a video, and I was like, oh, no, it has sound.
Oh, I've done that before.
So now you got me interested in ranch riding.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's going to be very seldom that they're going to run into cows. You know, within the rule books, there are five patterns. None of them ask for a cow. You know, it's only when the judge decides to come up with something for, you know, on his own or a group of judges or at a big event, and they think, well, if you've got a cow, let's put one out there.
We had,
you know,
a road,
so it's not
going
to be a cow event. We're not going to work a cow like working cow horse. We're never going to have to do a boxing or go down the fence or anything like that. Otherwise, now it just will become, you know, a cow class. But, yeah, you might have to ride around a pen that has cows in it, or you might have to ride through the pen, open the gate, and ride out the other side while the cows are milling around, you know, and we kind of had to do that in one of the go-rounds, too. So, you know, for the most part, it's really never a problem, but as long as your horses have kind of seen little things like that.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, we could go into that forever, because that is a really cool subject, and I definitely want to have you back to discuss events like the ranch riding, which is getting really popular. I think it's a really cool direction we're taking in the industry. And but there's something that you said when I was asking you what you wanted to talk about that piqued my interest, and you said how to fall off with style, which I feel like I do every time I fall off. But something told me you had a different idea when it comes to falling off with styles. So tell us what you mean by that.
Well, actually, Mary, I was just being funny, but since it is kind of becoming a subject now, I think there are some tips on that. You know, the basic thing with falling off with style is knowing when to fall off. You know, most of the time we're going, oh my God, I don't want to fall. And then we hang in too long. It's kind of the bull rider thing, you know. You don't very often see a bull rider get hurt when he's made it to the 8 seconds. He can get off on his own terms now, you know. It's when he's trying to hang in there just a little longer. And that is their job, you know. You know, we've all been in that position where we think, oh, man, I think I can ride this out. I think I can ride it. Oh, I'm not going to get this photo, you know. And so I think, you know, for me, I try to figure out, you know, is this going to get worse, or is this just one of those little crow hop things that I'm going, oh, hey, what were you thinking, you know? And, but there's all kinds of things that can happen. Horses can stumble, horses can, you know, and I've had that happen. And, you know, it's just one of the things that goes on. And so, you know, you learn to, you know, kind of follow the feel and go with the energy and try to, you know, step off on your own terms when you can. And, but when you can't, you know, it's just one of those things. And it's kind of a hard thing to practice unless you want to go, you know, sit on the roof of the barn and jump off every now and then, or, you know, stand on a fence and throw yourself on the ground. But,
I tell you what, one of the things, one of the things I would love to invest in, is a, like a bucking barrel that, you know, you see people set up like over a pond or
exactly,
over a mattress or something.
Sure.
You can actually practice mm-hmm. that kind of thing because you don't want to practice mm-hmm. so much on your horse in the moment.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and you know, that
it's
is
a tough thing.
It is, you know, and unfortunately that's where I've gotten most of my practice. But that is an interesting subject, and you know, it is totally, totally funny. And we talk about it, you know, I didn't get bucked off. I fell off with style.
Right. We all laugh about it. And in fact, as a group, sometimes we'll throw it, you know, we just think it's almost funny, you know, especially when you're riding with somebody and all of a sudden he's on the ground and he's like, ha ha, you know, that was cute. You know, but you know, sometimes it's not for sure. But I remember a few years ago, I took some martial arts classes. You know, and kind of got into that, and it was fun. And one of the things we learned in that was how to take a fall. You know, if somebody threw you around on the ground, and you know how to take the fall. And so I got into that for a little while, and I thought, boy, you know, if the situation ever comes up, I'll bet I could fall better. And wouldn't you know, about 2 weeks after that, it just happened. You know, the horse kind of jumped this way, spooked it a little something, and hey, you know, I really wasn't paying attention, and that's usually when it happens. You know, you're thinking about something else or whatever, and it just kind of catches you by surprise, and boy, all of a sudden, my martial arts training kicked in, and I just kind of rolled off of him, and boy, that worked out great. You know, otherwise that might hurt. You know, so you're right, Mary. There are ways to practice it, actually. And, you know, the bucking barrel, I think, is a great way, you know, or just kind of practice rolling and, you know, off on your shoulder and back onto your feet and just kind of let it roll through you instead of trying to defend against it. Just roll with it.
Yeah, I think, you know, There's a lot of things that you learn. It's almost unfortunate. A lot of the things that I learned about coming off of a horse or deciding when is the time. Okay, I need to get away from you now. We need to end our connection for a minute. and a lot of that stuff I learned starting colts. And you know, when I first started out, I joke. You know, when you work in these reining barns, especially, and you've got 20, 30 head of colts to start, when you first start out, you tend to be the crash test dummy, which is, you know, you're the ones who test out the source for us for about 30 rides until the really good trainers can come in and ride it. And so, you know, in my inexperience, horses would do a lot of things that now I'm able to prevent through training. But you know, you get horses that reared up and bucked around or kind of shot forward or spooked. And I learned a lot and I about vigilance. And you know, and this kind of goes back to our liberty before is gauging what's going to happen next. And you know, a couple of things that I do. I see a lot of riders, Western riders, ride with their stirrup all the way up to their heel of their boot. Now, you have a heel on your boot if you're smart. Yeah. And so the likelihood that you're going to run your foot through the stirrup is probably small. But I never put that stirrup past the ball of my foot. And on a young colt, right, I'll have it like I have my toes in that stirrup. I'd rather blow a stirrup.
Your toes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And so I got really good at, you know, if I was on a colt and I felt him, you know, lift up in the shoulder like he might rear up, I was ready to slip my feet from the stirrups and having your feet. I've been saved like by that in a stumble before, where nothing, you know, through no fault of the colt's, no fault of my own, we're loping along and he just lost his footing. I blew both my stirrups right away and was clear of the horse because I didn't have my foot jammed all the way up into that stirrup. So that's a huge thing I'd say. And also, you know, if you do get into a situation where maybe it started out as crow hopping and then all of a sudden it's not crow hopping anymore, I don't think I don't think there's any shame in bailing when you can, you know, to just save yourself from a bad situation. Yeah. And hopefully before. Yeah. So unfortunately the experience I gained happened to come through being a little bit ignorant and a little bit silly and stupid and learning to feel, oh, I know where this colt's going with this because unfortunately it's happened to me before. But hopefully before all of that, you know, one thing I definitely want to point out is, you know, I've ridden with some really talented kids who could ride anything, and they took really good pride in that. If a colt got really, really gnarly, they could stick with it, and they were tough. And there's a lot of admirable qualities in that. And man, if you can do it, more power to you. But for the colt's sake and for your own health, I don't think there's any problem in feeling a colt and saying, okay, this is not a good situation. And you can totally admit this is more than I can handle. Get off, work it out on the ground, you know, rethink the situation, get back on. It's going to make your horse happier. It's going to make you safe so you don't have any bad experiences.
Hmm. Well, Mary, that's a great tip, you know, and anytime it has happened, and there's been times when you know, I'd have to admit, I don't know how many thousands of horses I've rode over the, you know, in nearly 50 years of doing this, and I've probably only fallen off four times. So we're not talking like it's, you know, a normal occurrence. But I do everything I can to make sure it's not going to happen. You know, like you mentioned, the groundwork. You know, if you've done your groundwork, even when you're starting colts, you have minimized the chances of it going to happen. You know, but there are times when you think you've done everything you needed to do, and yet it still happens anyway. You know, or a horse stumbles or something like that. So, you know, it's good to be aware of what are the possibilities, and I think. You know, I remember you were talking about Jonathan Fields in one of his, you know, books when you were talking about the Liberty stuff. And Jonathan is so good. I remember one of his statements one time. Somebody said, well, are you, you know, you ride a lot of colts and, you know, you've been around horses. Surely you're not afraid of horses anymore. And he said, oh, my gosh, I'm afraid of them every day. You know?
Yeah.
And it is, you know, and it is something to be aware of. And it's not a, you know, it's not a gripping, crippling fear. It's a respect is what he meant. You know, for the things that can go right and a knowledge of what can go wrong, you know, and it just makes you aware and ready. And, you know, then you can avoid problems for sure.
Yeah. You know, I think that all ties in really well. You know, we're discussing the video earlier about the girl getting kicked and people tend to look at that video in that specific situation. And
of course, you can watch a video like
Jennifer,
that.
Jennifer, we have to have Mary.
Mary, there you are.
Mary, you have to unplug and replug again. It's that time of day.
It's that time of day. Your microphone's having a meltdown. There she is.
You gotta love Apple.
Yeah.
Thank you, Steve Jobs. Yes.
That right. Only lasts for 45 minutes and then they die.
It goes to Steve Jobs decided. No. So what I was getting into is it's easy to look at that specific video in that situation and both point out from the safety of your computer, oh, I saw that coming. And, you know, she didn't do this and I'm so, you know, and also to say, well, you shouldn't do Liberty. Well, as I was saying in a Facebook post about it, I said, I see a viral video every week of a wreck and it, sometimes it's driving, sometimes it's jumping, sometimes it's a guy starting a colt or roping a cow. And so it can happen anywhere. And that vigilance is so important. And I wish that I could bottle up the experience I've gained from being kicked and bit and struck and get, you know, that's where I've gotten my knowledge of, oh, this horse is going to do this next and I better be ready. I wish I could bottle it up and sell it so we could save people a lot of heartache and pain.
And bruises.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, I had an ex-box boss who said, learn from my pain, not your own, which I think is really important. Yeah. But yeah, sure. Be watchful and, you know, notice every flick of an ear and every, you know, every time a muscle tenses. And like you said, it's not a, oh my God, I have to bail because my horse flicked his ear. I think this behavior might lead to this and I'm ready for it. You know, I've got my one rein stop in order or I've got my night latch or I'm ready to get off and evaluate from the ground and then try it again.
Oh, hey, you know, and that's, and I agree with you totally. You know, I have no problem. Especially if nobody's watching, reaching and grabbing the horn, you know, it's there for honking, you know, it is a great piece of equipment. And, so I've got no problem reaching down and grabbing that and putting myself back where I belong. You know, and we've all watched, as you said, the videos of a wreck or something like that. And we're all backseat drivers and we go, well, they should have done this or they should have done that. But you know, and they probably did, you know, it's just one of those things. Somebody happened to be have their phone out and videoing when something totally unexpected happened, you know. And but kind of as Jonathan was alluding to, you know, always be prepared for the unexpected, and you know, and then it generally works out.
Yeah. You know, that's so important. We do, you know, I love playing with my horse. I love having fun. I love doing the Liberty. But it's first got to start with that respect. It's a two-way, you know, street. I have a healthy respect for what my horse is capable of and how fragile I am in this situation. And my horse also needs to have a healthy respect of, okay, this is the boundary you're not going to cross.
Well, another thing too, that I think, you know, people need to be aware of it is when a challenging situation comes up, like the horse, you know, spooks at a flag or spooks at something, you need to sit there like, what were you thinking? You know, Because if you spook at the same time the horse spooks, you just confirm to them that, wow, I knew something was wrong, you know, and they can feel it from you. So it's kind of one of those things that over time you've just learned to, you know, train yourself to go totally relaxed when things go bad. But, you know, and that probably takes a while. But if you tense up and get spooked at the same time, that's probably when it's really going to go south.
Yeah, then you're just feeding off each other. And that, oh my gosh, yeah, that's a whole other discussion is I would call it learning. Yeah, learning to be a leader for your horse. And
next month, here we go.
Yes, so we will definitely have you back because that's a whole topic that I would be interested in getting into. But unfortunately, we're running out of time. But I really appreciate you coming on, and I think we got some really good insight into a lot of fun things. And so before we go, do you have anything special coming up, clinics, or is there a good place we can find?
Well, yeah, thank you for asking. We've got some great clinics coming up around the country. I'm also traveling the world, going to New Zealand and Australia here shortly for a while. And we've got some DVDs, some new ones coming out on ranch riding, which was one of the topics we talked about there briefly. And it should be out eventually, which you can find on the website at CraigJohnsonInternational.com. And also check us out on Facebook, Craig Johnson Reining Horses on Facebook. Like the page and kind of follow some of the tips and ideas and fun things that we have on there.
Awesome. Good. So that is CraigJohnsonInternational.com and Craig Johnson Reining Horses on Facebook. Well, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mary.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Jen.
Bye.
That was a lot of fun. Wow. Now I'm going to have to go watch lots and lots and lots of ranch riding videos and figure out where I can do that too.
Oh, it is really fun. And other than, you know, the World Show where they did throw in the cattle,
I think that was a perfectly legitimate thing to do at the World's. Hello.
Yes, you have to. I mean, if you have a world caliber horse, I can argue both sides. Obviously, they were well within the rules, you know, and they're, mm-hmm. you know, it's in the rule book. We might throw some cows your way. You know, I would still have an internal panic attack, but on the outside, I would look really cool like a cowboy, like, oh, we brand cattle every week. So yeah, we're totally ready for this.
On a ranch, they could have put an elk in there. You're going to come across him too.
Well,
you know, and if you're a Florida cowboy, they should toss an alligator in there.
Exactly.
So
and
that, yeah,
some
that was cool.
Giant eagle-sized mosquitoes.
Eagle-sized mosquitoes. Yeah. vultures who flap in the trees and land on your horse's head.
Oh, yeah.
Wild boar who skitter past. Feral cattle who are where you don't expect them. I could go on and on.
Z-donks.
Z-donks. Got those two emus. Goes on and on and on. Well, that was a really fascinating conversation. I enjoyed that. So let's take a break, and we're going to listen to an appropriate song today, Breakaway Runaway by Bren Hill. And then we'll be right back with our next guest.
Gather slack on a Saturday night on a horse bred Lucky J Pine. She spins his heels in the July dust and whispers everything is gonna be fine. The price of diesel's up $1.15 since they struck you out in the spring. They broke left and she missed him clean. All she can do now is cling to the dream of a breakaway. Run away, there's another rodeo down a long dark road. She's far away from her Selway River home. She's gonna bring the big money back one day. She's a breakaway. Run away. Her heart breaks at the sound of his voice saying, Mommy, when you're coming back home. Whisper soon, but she's got no choice. She never dreamed she could feel so alone. There's a fire burning deep inside and a new hope shining in her eyes. She was born to rope and ride from the Texas plains to the Selway skies. She's a breakaway, runaway. There's another rodeo down coming back home. Her heart's flying when the chute gate opens. Horses running like the Selway's rolling. Break away, run away. There's another rodeo down a long dark road. She's far away from her Selway River home. She's gonna bring the big money back. Break away, run away. Break away, run away.
And thanks for listening. This is Horses in the Morning with Mary Kitzmiller. Lovely. That was a pretty song. I expected it to be kind of, I hadn't heard it before. I expected something different. That was a kind of a pretty song.
Yeah, I really like that. I'm gonna put that in the old iTunes library.
I agree. And it looks like we've got our next guest on the phone and ready to go.
Okay, we've got someone with a really unique perspective on horse training because she's actually also a professional dog trainer. So we have with us today Jen Digaty. Is that pronounced right?
Jen Digaty.
Digaty.
I was close.
Ah. Oh my goodness.
You were so close.
It was close. It's like the supercar Bugatti. Digaty.
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, you gave me the phonetic pronunciation because all of a sudden I thought, oh, wait, maybe I'm pronouncing this wrong. And then I couldn't pronounce the phonetic pronunciation, so I thought, I'm just going to wing it.
You did great.
Yeah. So I have to say, when I was first getting into clicker training, I only knew about a few things you could teach, like novelty stuff, you know, like how to teach your horse to put a basketball in a basket and, you know, some tricks and liberty. And for some reason, I never imagined that you could use it for just horse training in general, for everything. Because really, when you think about it, tricks are just another behavior that you can shape. And I have to say that your blog post and your videos and your pictures are one of the things that helped me realize, oh my goodness, I can use this for collection and starting horses. So I really wanted to have you on the show to discuss some of those aspects because I think you have a really cool thing going on with your horses and dogs, as it turns out.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. So... what I thought we could do today was maybe discuss some of the similarities and differences between dogs and horses. So does that sound like something you'd be interested in?
Yes, for sure. With clicker training, I think, I've gushed about it on just about every single show because I really enjoy it and it's opened up a lot of new things for me. And I think when people first hear about clicker training, maybe the only association they've had with it in the past has been maybe with the marine mammals because it has been developed with that but also with dogs because it's really taken off in the dog world. And so I think people say, well, that's for dogs, you know, I can't use it on a horse. Right. But as you probably know, there are a lot of similarities and, you know, they can learn in a lot of the same ways horses can. So with your experiences doing both, tell us about some of the similarities.
Yeah, I think that, it's incredibly similar. So in terms of the actual learning process between the two animals, you know, any of us, horses, dogs, you know, humans, parakeets, even hermit crabs, if you present a sound and right after you follow it with something that's a primary reinforcer, something they value, usually food, then that sound is going to come to have meaning for them. So certainly once that sound comes to have meaning for them, you can use it to reinforce, as you noticed, any behavior that you want. So it doesn't just need to be a trick. It can be any behavior that you're hoping to shape or increase with your animal. So in terms of the actual process of learning, you know, there's literally no difference whatsoever. So that's the good news. And then, of course, the difference is that they're different species. So obviously there's different tendencies. There's different concerns with safety, which we all know working with horses, they're a lot bigger than dogs. And so I think when people get in trouble, it's because they really know the science with their dogs. They have some experience. A lot of us have dogs because they're little and they're cheaper to keep in our houses. So we have a few or 10 of those around. And so we go to take it out to our horses, but it turns out there's a little bit more of a learning process that we have to go through. And I think the word is getting out about that. But I think it's still helpful to still discuss it so that when people go out there, they can do it safely and they can end up enjoying the process with their horse.
Yeah, you know, I completely agree with you. Unfortunately, for some reason, you know, I've heard it said that, oh, if you can train a horse, you can train dogs. And, or if you're any kind of horse trainer, you should be good with dogs. Well, my dogs are heathens. You would be appalled. But most of my dogs don't weigh above 6 pounds. So if my chihuahua right. jumps on me, it's adorable. If my horse jumps on me, yeah, if my 1,000-pound horse jumps on me, it's kind of a big deal. So I can definitely see where you have to have some parameters set up before you go out and work with your horses. So yeah, unfortunately, I did not get the dog training gene, and I don't understand why, but. I have had a lot of fun using some dog training resources to work with my horses, which I found really interesting. Like, you know, we're playing around with a little bit of agility and training, chaining behaviors together, which you see a lot. You know, when you see those dog agility courses and you see these border collies just hit one obstacle after another, and it looks like they just read the pattern on their own and they get it. But a lot of that is behaviors that are chained together and owners that are giving them cues, you know, do this next, do this next, do this next. And I think using that with horse training is really fascinating. So,
And I think when we can start to think about, you know, with dogs, of course we don't sit on them. So, with dogs, all the cues tend to be visual, right, and environmental. So it's the actual tunnel, like you're talking about, or it's the A-frame. Mm-hmm. And so there's some big environmental cue that's helping the dog know what behavior is going to be required of them next. And a lot of times with our horses, one, we're up on top of them. You know, ideally, it's a lot of fun to be up there, but they can't see us for the most part. So all of our cues are going to be largely tactile. So I think our horses have a little bit of a harder job, but I think what you're saying about the dogs in the agility and the way everything's chained together, and also that one cue can end up reinforcing another. So if you have done a really good job of, you know, teaching your horse to give their jaw, and you have a really big reinforcement history on your horse giving their jaw, then you can actually use that cue as a reinforcer for another behavior that's difficult for them. So you can, with clicker training, you can start to look at when you're up there riding your horse, using one behavior to reinforce another behavior and strengthening behaviors under saddle that maybe for your horse are more physically difficult or less likely to happen. So you can get really creative about making your ride fun for you and your horse.
Yeah. And, you know, that's something that when I first looked into clicker training horses, and I went to one of Alex Curlin's first clinics, that they were doing a little bit of that kind of loopy training where they were using, I think they were using like a stationary target to reinforce other behaviors. And even though I saw it in action, I didn't quite understand what was going on or if that was going to be useful for me, because what I was looking at was a horse that would do something cool. You know, they'd do some behavior that was really nice, and then the person would bring them over to the target or tell them to go to the target, and the horse would touch it and they'd get a reward. And I thought, well, that's kind of out there and I don't really need my horse to do that. And right. It wasn't until lots of reading, a lot of reading dog training books, actually, that I thought, oh my goodness, you can make this work for like things like a reining pattern or a jump course. So like a jump course is going to be a lot like an agility course or even an extreme cowboy race, which is something I've done a time or two. So like you were saying with the dogs, if the dog sees, you know, if they're in, if something is in their line of vision, like a tunnel or an A-frame, it's like a prop cue for them. They're like, oh, this is next. And so I think with horses too, you know, if they come over one jump and there's another jump right ahead, they see that as, okay, this is next. And they've probably been reinforced for doing that well before. So you can see how one thing will reinforce the other thing, will reinforce the other thing. And the specific exercise I've done to play around with this concept is the mat training or mark training, where I've trained Guthrie to stand on a mat. And he's never in trouble for not doing it. He's only been reinforced for doing it. So he loves his mark. In fact, half the time I have to tell him, don't go to the mark yet. Wait. Right. Because he's dragging me over there.
Right.
And
right.
So, yeah. So I've taken, one of the things I've done is I've actually put a cue to it. So I have a verbal cue that says, I say, load up, which means go get on your mat. And I don't know, that just kind of happened. So I say load up, and that means go to the mat. And because he has no bad memories of it, he's never been in trouble for not doing it. He's only been reinforced. When he hears load up, he goes, oh my gosh, it's time to go to my mat. And when I go to my mat, I get clicked. And when I get clicked, I get treated. So I can use that for things like, I've been using it for lead changes because you're probably like me. And when you click, you want your horse to stop. I know that's what I want to do for safety. I want you to stop. I don't want you to keep going. So if you're in the middle of a lead change, and you click right as the horse change leads, if he stops right there, it's going to kind of wreck your maneuver. So what I've started doing is when he does the lead change, instead of clicking, I'll say load up. So he's going to keep cantering onto his mat, and then he's going to hear the click. So when he hears load up, that has become just as reinforcing as maybe me releasing my reins or hearing the click or saying good boy or giving food. And if you think about that, you can make it work for like a reining pattern. I mean, you could theoretically back chain an entire reining pattern. So this is stuff that's been hurting my brain and keep me up for hours at night.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. Whenever I ride, I have a mat in the middle of my arena because if my horse offers some beautiful work, then I'm definitely going to send them into the middle to their mat. And like you said, they've only been clicked and treated for being on the mat. It's only something they've offered and wanted to do. And so it's just an extra level of reinforcement that you can offer your horse. And it's going to increase the behavior that happened before it as well, just like you noticed. So the mat itself becomes a conditioned reinforcer. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so a lot of, I mean, a lot of those ideas of chaining behaviors and things that are used in those dog agilities and freestyles, you know, you can see that how it carries over into horse training. What are some of the differences you've noticed between training dogs and training horses?
Well, when I work with dogs, I work primarily with aggressive dogs. So I do a lot of behavior modification in terms of helping them develop coping skills and get along with other dogs and get along with their housemates. But what I did want to mention about the difference between dogs and horses is that with dogs, because we live with them informally, so basically, you know, for most of us, especially those of us that have chihuahuas, if you're in your house, you're with your dogs, you know. So basically, you know, throughout the day, you're with them. And so only part of the day would you be actually training them. And the rest of the day, you know, you're hanging around with them just like you would the other people that live with you. So because of that, from the time that our dogs are small and from the time that our dogs are puppies, usually most humans have gone through, not all, but usually most humans have gone through at least a simple process to teach their dogs how to offer one polite behavior around food. And it's just part of how we live with dogs. So instead of having our dogs, you know, jumping in our laps or bothering our guests, because we have high value food out 3 to, you know, 7 times a day, depending on our eating habits, we've taught our dog maybe just to sit or maybe just to keep 4 feet on the floor. So our dogs every day have regular experience with being around high-value food that they have to offer a learned behavior in order to earn. And then with our horses, what I see when we go outside with them is because we don't live with them, you know, in their pasture informally, what people tend to do is, you know, we just throw them their hay. And a lot of times people throw them their hay regardless of the behavior that's happening on the other side of the fence or the other side of the stall. And then they have, you know, their entire flake of hay. And they work on that. And so they learn that, the best way to get food from a human is to be frustrated because they're slow coming down that line of stalls. Or, you know, you're getting flake number 8 in the pasture and it's taking the human a while. So you're pinning your ears and your human throws the hay because they're in a hurry to get back in the house. So then what I see people extrapolate from that when they're looking at the two species and the difference between them is they assume that dogs are better able to handle frustration than horses. And I think that's a real fallacy. I think it just has to do with the way that we tend to live with them in our houses. And so what I would encourage everyone, you know, to do is just to notice what behavior your horse is offering when you're feeding them and see if you can't teach them a different behavior to offer and reinforce that behavior instead. Even if it's as simple as taking a handful of grain from your pocket, extending your hand toward their chest, and when they back up one step away from you, giving them that handful of grain so they learn I can get my human to feed me through backing up and being, you know, quote unquote, polite, which is a label, but it still feels good because a little space, you know, never hurt anybody. So that's the biggest difference that I just wanted to get out there, is that learning to behave around food is an educational process, and our dogs just tend to come by it casually because we live with them.
I think that is an amazing point, not only for those who are wanting to get into clicker training, but just horses in general. And I have to say, this is something I've been thinking about myself a lot lately, in the fact that people see a trainer giving food to a horse for good behavior, whether they're using a marker signal or not. And almost across the board, the initial reaction is, oh my God, don't do that. You know, you're spoiling your horse. He's not a big poodle. This is bad. And for a while, I used to simply say, well, you've just got to work on it and established ground rules and everything. And then I got to thinking, wait a minute. Okay, so let's say, and I use this analogy all the time. So people say, don't treat your horse, don't work with food or don't use food because they get aggressive and it's bad and you're going to spoil your horse. And I think, okay, what about if I'm starting a horse and let's say I get a colt out and I saddle him for the first time and he bucks with the saddle or maybe he bucks the saddle off. So I got some really bad behavior or unwanted behavior. I didn't want that to happen. That could be dangerous.
Right.
Do I say, okay, well, I just can't saddle you anymore. We'll have to learn to get along without tack, which is fine. It's very noble to try that. So do I just say, well, when I saddle him, he bucks, so I'm just not going to saddle him. Well, no. Any trainer worth his salt is going to tell you, no, we've got to work on accepting it, and this is important, and he has to work in a world where he's going to have to get used to tack, and I'm going to have to provide rules for him and comfort and teach him to accept this, and this behavior is okay, and this behavior is not. You know, same thing with the trailer. Let's say I try to load my horse in a trailer, and he flew backwards out of it and maybe knocked me over in the process. Do I say, well, I just can't haul you anywhere. You're just going to stay at home.
Right.
And we're just going to live that way. So I think it's the same way with food. Now, you may decide that food is not going to be in your program, and that's totally your prerogative. But if you do decide, man, this is a very useful tool, you're going to do the same things that you would for saddling or standing tied or working with the farrier. You're going to teach your horse, here are the rules, and here's what is okay, here's what's not okay. And so I think that's kind of not a great excuse. And you're just going to attack it with the same discipline and wherewithal that you would work on anything else. And one of the things I've noticed, so I mentioned earlier that I'm entirely ADD when it comes to learning. And if I see a video, maybe a clicker training video, where someone at the end of the video, they're having their horse jump a jump. But in the beginning, they're talking about things like safety and we're going to work on handling food. My ADD mind tends to skip over all that boring stuff and go to the jumping part until my horse does something unsafe. And then I realize, oh, I have to watch the beginning of the
video. Until you cut your finger off. That's what happens.
Yeah.
Until you cut your finger off.
So when I started clicker training, I did the safety with the food, but I did it almost as a, let's get this over with so we can get to the cool stuff. Right. And what I didn't realize was the value training good food behavior. Yeah, that's good for safety and stuff. But it also made my horse better everywhere else because it developed emotional control. He's learned that sometimes you're going to hear a can of grain shake and you know that tossing your head and pinning your ears or kicking the stall door will not get reinforced, but maybe doing something else will, like Alex Curlin's pose, which is, you know, I call it Guthrie's pretty face, which he does in a lot of his photos. So I think that's really interesting. So do you have any tips on, I know that's a whole series of lessons and stuff, but do you have any tips that people can sort of take with them when you do start working with food?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think starting with protective contact is a great way to start. So if people are unfamiliar with that, that's just having your horse behind a barrier of any sort. So whether that's in a round pen or in their stall or just with the stall guard up, you know, you have to decide how much of a barrier you think might be necessary for your horse, because a lot of times when we put on a pouch and we have some grain in there, some alfalfa pellets, that is significantly higher octane food than our horses are used to in their daily life. And even if they are used to it, we usually just dump it into their bin. So the idea that we're wearing it on our hip and we're, you know, basically from their point of view, restricting access to it, can be frustrating. And so they're going to revert to whatever their history was. So it's really important that we are fairly, not fast, because we never really want to be fast around horses, but that we are prompt and organized. So you can put your horse behind a barrier. You're going to have your treat pouch. You're going to have your food in your pouch. And usually we just start out with touching a target, so a cone, a water bottle, and you want to put it basically so that your horse's nose bumps right into it. You're going to click that moment. You're going to put the bottle into your other hand so that your hand closest to your horse is free, reach in your pouch, and then feed right to your horse's mouth, and then switch the bottle back, and you're going to have it right there so they can touch it again. So the more organized you are in your movements so that your horse can start to see a pattern initially will help them feel relaxed about the fact that they can solve this puzzle that you're presenting. So I think that's really important. And then once they're touching the target and they're showing that they really understand the criteria that if I touch this, you will click, and that lets me know that you're then going to reach and dispense the food. And this is Alexandra's second lesson as well, and it's so, so useful, even for a tiny, you know, whether it's a crossover horse that you just got into your barn that day and they've, you know, had 10 years of history with someone else, or a little foal that's 3 weeks old, the backward food delivery is so valuable and such an easy way to teach them to back up and away from you. So you reach in your pouch, you take the food, and so your fist comes to your shoulder and you unfold your elbow toward your horse, and it ends up going right toward their chest, and they'll back up to receive that food, and then they get reinforced for walking away from you, and then you can just target them forward, and pretty soon you have back up and go forward in like a 5-minute session. So just making sure that you're safe, the horse is behind a barrier in case they become frustrated, so they're safe from themselves, and that you teach them very quickly two behaviors in order to earn the reinforcement. So just like you said, they know what doesn't work, but they need to know what works too.
Yeah, and I have to say, I've played with that. I think it works really, really well if you're introducing this to a wild Mustang or a really, really timid horse. You know, when you're trying to first make contact with the Mustang, whether you have a halter on or not, and you've had experience with this, you know that if you make too big a commotion, they might just decide to book it and they're gone. And so, you know, you need to teach them come forward and back, but a lot of times you want to make those first lessons kind of quiet. And I think using that food lure is a really great way to start that process of you know, a gentle backup. And you can get a really, really nice backup because they sort of have to, you know, flex their head to do it. So you actually can get a collected backup without having the halter on for the first time, which I find really cool without having to, you know, to use a whole lot of, you know, tools or even pressure. So yeah, those are some cool things. And, you know, instead of being on the lookout to punish your horse for doing the wrong thing, which I'm not opposed to punishment. I think it has its place, but, instead of punishing, give him another task to do instead. So instead of digging in my pocket, why don't you stand quietly, you know, not digging in my pocket? So you think of preventing something, but really you're teaching him a new behavior entirely, like maybe keep your head straight. And that's really helped me a lot in backing off of having to increase pressure or having to really get in there and get after my horse. Because, you know, at the same time you're wanting them to connect, if you're constantly pushing or chasing them away, you're sort of going to drop that connection. So it's really cool to work on those good behaviors without having to always go to trying to shush them off of you all the time.
Right, right, exactly. And I think that, you know, you want to think of all those behaviors as balancers for each other. So certainly with a wild Mustang, you know, or maybe a little foal that was more timid, I wouldn't start the backward food delivery until I had enough forward that I was thinking that I would like to then balance it out. So you wouldn't start that right away. Like you said, you need them coming forward, feeling comfortable with you. And then at that point, you would introduce the idea of also backing away as a possibility.
Awesome. Now, I know it's probably hard to choose, but do you have, working with both dogs and horses, do you have one that you prefer working with, one over the other?
Oh, God, you're going to put me on the spot. Do I have one that I prefer? Well, since I was a little girl, I certainly have been obsessed with horses. So if I had to choose which inspires me more, sort of from, you know, a storybook standpoint, and certainly I really enjoy riding and using the clicker and positive reinforcement to shape that has really made, you know, my life in horses possible, because I just wasn't comfortable using, you know, a lot of pressure, using a lot of punishers. So I would probably choose horses, but I have to give my shout out to the dogs, because really when I was too poor to have horses, and I got my dogs, I really cut my teeth on them in terms of training. And they've paid for, you know, my whole life here. My whole business has allowed me to have this farm and everything else. So I couldn't have one without the other, but I'm certainly just a touch more obsessed with the horsework.
Of course. I mean, I think we're sort of preconditioned to be drawn to the horses with all the girl and horse movies. I mean, you know, how can you not?
Right. Right, exactly.
Well, good deal. That's a whole realm of information. I'd love to have you back on the show sometime. We're running a little bit out of time. I was wondering, where can people find you if they want to learn more about how you train?
Absolutely. They can go to my blog, and that's spellboundhorses.com. And if they need help with their dog, they can go to my dog website, and that's wildcanine.com.
Wonderful. Well, I really appreciate talking with you. I think this is actually the first time we've talked on the phone. We've been Facebook friends for a few years now. Yeah.
I didn't even know your voice. I was like, oh, that's Mary.
Yeah. I'm a little high-pitched and enthusiastic on the radio. So
That's good.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it. I'd love to have you back on again sometime.
I would love to be back. It was my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Well, that was another fascinating conversation. It was fun because I never thought of, you know, the ways we subconsciously or inadvertently train our pets with a positive reinforcement aspect, and then also how we train our horses. You know, every day when we feed our horses their morning chow and their lunch chow and their evening chow and their late night chow, we are in a way using food as a reinforcing aspect, because they beat on their feed bucket and suddenly food shows up. So from their point of view, if I beat on my feed bucket, I'm going to get fed.
Right. And if you do have a barn full of 20 horses and 10 of them are kicking their stall doors, are you going to take 3 hours? And really, it seems daunting, like, oh, how am I going to recondition all my horses to be perfect gentlemen when I'm feeding them? You can start it with really small adjustments every day without having to take an hour out of your day while you're feeding. But yeah, it really does open your eyes. You know, I think a lot of us are told by professionals as we're learning with horses that you're constantly reinforcing behavior. And, you know, every time you're with your horse, you're training them, whether you know it or not. But we tend to forget about that feeding part. And this is actually, I want to do a little short video on this to post online. This is actually something I've been working on a lot with Guthrie. And whenever I go to feed him, you know, he's got his little pose, which is something I learned from Alex Curlin, where he flexes his, you know, his head in a form of collection. And so when I go to feed him, I go in a stall and I actually shake the grain bucket. And he knows when he hears that me shaking that bucket, instead of reaching out toward it or being silly, he goes into his little pose. And when he does that, then I click and I dump his dinner. So he gets a huge reward for doing that pose, which, as it turns out, will show up when I ride him the next day, because I taught him that little how to flex his neck. So when I work with him the next day, he remembers, oh man, last time I did this, I got dinner. I got six pounds of grain.
Yes. And so that's a word of caution for people who are starting down the path of positive reinforcement. Do not ever teach your horse a skill that you don't want him to volunteer.
Yes.
Because they're going to do it and say, I'm doing it. Am I going to get something?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been very careful. I've had Guthrie for nearly 2 years now. I've only just now started working on the rear, which I've been very, very careful about because I am reinforcing it. So I have to make sure
this
that
is for professionals
happens.
Only. Don't try this at home.
Do not. Yeah. Any kind of front foot behavior, Spanish walk, counting your age, shaking hands. I have tended to stay away from it really heavily. And I've just now started working on the rear. This is after 2 years of building a foundation. And I'm very careful to make sure it goes on cue and no other time.
No other time. So, well, for folks who are starting down this positive reinforcement path or have already started down it and want a little bit of guidance, you have a great DVD available, don't you?
I do. I have an intro DVD on my website, MaryKitzMiller.com. You can find it under the shop. So I have behaviors that you can start out teaching, like targeting, which is a lot of trainers' first exercise that they include. And then I do work on food manners.
Food manners, right?
Yes. Even if you're not going to be a clicker trainer, you're not going to use... Even if you're not going to use treats during training, it's still a good idea to start instilling that in your horse. Because if you can teach him emotional control in all situations, it's going to make your rides and everything else much better. And your horse is going to be much more mature and patient.
Yeah. And then reminder for everybody that you will be at the Western States Horse Expo in Pomona. That's California, on February 5th through 7th, doing demos. And for everyone listening, don't forget to send in your really bad ads. Friday, we have really bad ads as usual. And I cleaned out the inbox, so I need lots of really bad ads. We have our listeners send in bad ads they find online for horses and related items, cows, pigs, farrier work, whatever it is. copy and paste the entire ad into your email and send it to Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. And if we read it on the air, you have a chance to win an awesome prize. And I think we're about all in for the day, Mary. What do you think?
Yeah. Man, this was a good one. It's got my brain working.
I told you I could make you gab over time.
Yes. We know that's such a challenge, getting me to come out of my shell.
And we did
I got to take a nap. Good job.
Yeah.
Guys. Yay. Well, you can find links to today's guests as well as all of the other show notes at horsesinthemorning.com. And you can find us on Facebook. Just search Horses in the Morning. Or if you're a tweeter, you can follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. And don't forget, you can download the free Horse Radio Network app for your iPhone or Android. Just go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network. It's quick, it's free, and it's easy. Or if you're old school, isn't that amazing? If you're old school, you can subscribe via iTunes. And if you missed the live show, and you probably did if you're listening on this one, you can find us on the website at horsesinthemorning.com. All of our shows, all 1,330 something of them, are there. And thanks to our sponsor of today's show, Mary Kitzmuller.
Thank you very much.
See you next month, eh?
All right. See ya.
Bye, Mary.
Bye.